our keynote speaker. And I was like, no way I'm going to do that on Thursday morning. But let's give it a shot. So thank you so much for coming in early in the morning. And let's get the show on the road, yeah? All right. So basically, I'm based in Auckland. I work for a company called Intergen. That's why we're called as working for Team Yellow. You see all the guys who are running around with the guitars and stuff like that. That's my team. And I live and breathe SharePoint and infrastructure, primarily infrastructure background from Ministry of Health back in Wellington days and things like that. And I have moved up to Auckland a couple of years back. And I ride a couple of motorbikes. Have come off it so many times. I still don't give up. Still keep riding. I drink quite a bit of coffee. I've had enough this morning, but I'm still a bit shaky. So I'm sure by the fourth slide, I should be, you know, slightly leveled up and things like that. Right, so I tweeted this in the morning today, and basically what I'm trying to achieve out of our session today is, you know, most clients that I go and talk to about SharePoint and deploying SharePoint, they're like, and I give them an architecture or something. Oh, we need this many servers, this much RAM, hard disk, and things like that. And they're like, oh my God, it sounds like we're deploying the whole data center just for SharePoint, right? So I've heard this quite a lot, SharePoint being called the monster, you know, who eats infrastructure, basically. And in spite of feeding it, 6 months down the line, it starts slowing down. And we're like, oh, let's give it more RAM, more CPU, more whatever. And still doesn't seem to be working out, right? So this is our focus in, with Azure in, on the sideline. And I'm going to be talking a lot more on how we can take this workload off your on-premise deployments onto Azure and, you know, different scenarios and things like that, all right? So what's the agenda for today? Basically, I'm going to go through a quick run-through on why Azure. Basically, as a whole, not just SharePoint, why Azure as a whole, a cloud infrastructure and a cloud architecture. And then why do I do SharePoint on Azure, all right? And then we're going to open the hood and look at what keeps it ticking underneath, you know, from an Azure perspective. What are the bits and pieces that you need to get SharePoint running on Azure? And then a lot of lessons that I've learned. In the last 9 months, I've pretty much done just one on-prem deployment of SharePoint 2013. A few of my other projects have all been on Azure, and looks like that's where we are headed towards, right? So some of the lessons that I've learned and things like that, and what are the tips that I can provide you guys with going and doing SharePoint on Azure and stuff like that. So why Azure? I mean, a lot of us, I mean, throughout the sessions from last year onwards, decade, we've just been hearing cloud and cloud and cloud. But, I mean, these sort of numbers have been coming out in the market, and people have been talking a lot more about it. What that means is basically we're taking a lot more expense and budget that the traditional IT departments had, and we're spending it outside on other infrastructure deployments, not within your own infrastructure or within your data center. We're taking them cash out slowly from spending it within and taking it out. By 2020, it is predicted that almost 30% of IT budgets are going to be cloud-oriented. Now, why do we take Azure, and why should we? Is Azure able to scale to the level that I need and things like that? So I've got three examples here, basically. You guys must have heard about these examples already. So we had the Sochi Olympics, the Winter Olympics happening in Sochi, and basically the Azure platform was used for the whole streaming session, and some of the numbers are incredible. You know, you had 100 million viewers hitting the same Azure platform that you and I would use to deploy SharePoint at some day. And we had around 2.1 million customers hitting one of the specific games, which was the US versus Canada hockey game. I'm quite shocked that was the only number that was available on the papers and media, but I'm sure the numbers were much higher than that. So What I want you to understand from these numbers and from the next one that I'm going to show you guys is basically the fact that even with this sort of scale hitting and with this sort of numbers hitting the Azure platform, none of the other customers complained saying that, hey, my deployment, which could be potentially next to the Sochi deployment or on the same rack and things like that, was affected. You didn't hear about these sort of things. Titanfall is a multiplayer online game that came out, and on the first day, those were the number of Azure VMs that were deployed by Microsoft to cope with the launch of the game and things like that. 300,000 cores. I mean, that's something which we probably won't see in our lifetime and things like that, unless we work for, I don't know, some big NASA or something like that. But from our perspective, we look at Active Directory. We look at authentication in so many levels. These are certain numbers that's running on Azure these days. I mean, these numbers keep changing, but this is roughly the sort of numbers of authentication that's happening. 18 billion authentications per week. I mean, that's just humongous. I mean, that's the scale to which Azure platform is being projected and being promoted as. Now, Azure Storage, it's an amazing piece of work. So we are having blob storage on Azure, which you guys all know about, and there's 25 trillion objects being accessed from the blob storage. So when I look at Azure, I'm basically seeing these three points being emphasized. One is the hyperscale, which I've clearly explained in the last three slides. And my favorite is this hybrid capability. I don't think tomorrow we are going to have less and less of on-premise deployments or on-premise data centers, but more the capability of integrating both the on-premise along with your Azure platform. That's the hybrid capability that I'm talking about. The enterprise capability, I'm just going to cover on a long, you know, overstretch. It's not just SharePoint. It's not just Microsoft products. You have Unix now. You have Salesforce running on it right now. SAP is supported. And, you know, so whatever may be your workload that you run on your on-premise has the capability to be transferred onto Azure. So as you all know, there's different data centers in different regions, 16 in total. I'm going to quickly run through these slides because these are quite familiar to all of you guys. We're really hoping for these guys to come online pretty quick, the Australian ones. Rumors are that it's going to be this side of Christmas. Let's hope so. I think with data centers this close to us and the latency being that low compared to the closest that we can go to is Southeast Asia, which is around 160 milliseconds compared to West US, which is only 180. So it's just a 20 millisecond difference between going to Southeast Asia and to US, West US. So, I mean, once the data centers come online within Sydney, that should help you move your workload. Also, if you are a vendor, help your customers move their workload onto Azure someday. So, been working with in the IT sector for a few years now, and these are some of the challenges that I see that normal IT departments and IT firms face. We have to save costs, all right, and increase our revenue. Revenue doesn't mean we have to generate revenue from our own firm. Our firm is our client if you have an internal IT department, right? We're being told to bring in more and more innovation into the IT departments without spending, right? So you can't spend, but you need to innovate. You need to be 2020, you know? You need to be more innovative with your business processes, the business applications that you use, and things like that. Users are being, you know, end users, they're never happy. Oh, this stuff is so slow. That, you know, that internet, I click on Internet Explorer, and that homepage that opens up on Monday morning, it's so slow. That's because nobody's hit SharePoint over the weekend or something, and the application pool is ready, or somebody is not running a warm-up script or something of that sort. So users are demanding a lot more experience out of their platform from the IT department. And usually what we face is they're not getting what they want. and business processes are driving towards new outcomes. Basically, what that means is a company, what used to do maybe a couple of months back or last year, has to change its business process coming this year because it has a lot more changes if it has to stay in the market and live and things like that. So this gives me, as a traditional system administrator, to move from the boundaries of just looking after systems to adding more value to what I do as a job. It's not just, oh, I'm going to look after the servers and just sit there and do stuff. No, you guys can do, take, if you are a system administrator or network administrator and things like that, you can add more value to what you do as a job. You know, you can sell more solutions back to your firm and add more value to your own profile. As I said, the hybrid capability is what excites me about Azure, and basically the ability to migrate workloads. And this is exactly what I'm going to be showing in demos. I'm going to be running an on-prem solution, completely migrating to Azure very soon in one of the next slides. So let's look at the service level agreements that's available with Azure. So 99.95% multiple role instances. What that basically means is, let's say you have a single instance of a workload, and if you can create multiple instances of it and leave it on an availability set, which we'll dig into very soon. So what that basically means is I can lose one node of my application, but have the rest of the nodes apply. So this number applies to instances and workloads that have multiple instances of the same thing running. What's included in that is the computer failure, data center failures, and the hardware. So you're basically, your host machines are basically covered within the SLA. What's not covered is the actual operating system and its... So if we do something, run a script that crashes the VM, that's our problem. That's not Azure's problem. And guest OS updates. So you have to have a policy of whatever updates that you run and things like that within your on-prem to be followed on through your Azure platform as well. I spoke briefly about the enterprise capabilities of Azure. So these guys at the bottom of your screens are the players that you can. So I put SharePoint there just to cover the whole Microsoft stack, basically. But you can go Oracle now. You can bring in your Oracle workload from your on-prem. You can bring your Linux workloads onto Azure as well. So basically what it's saying is run workloads on Azure, which was traditionally run on on-prem. The other capabilities are the networking capabilities, which we will dig in more deeper when we go into the demos and stuff like that. Basically, I want to cover quickly is that you don't have to think your Azure as an external data center, which you have to maintain. Think of it as an extension of your current on-prem data center and being able to bring in all the networking capabilities that you currently employ within your on-prem to Azure as well. All right, so let's get into why do Azure on SharePoint? Sorry, why do SharePoint on Azure? There we go. That didn't sound right. Okay, cool. So these are the different cloud models that we look at. So we have our traditional data center model, which is your on-prem, where you have complete responsibility over all the whole stack. All right? And then we go on to something like software as a service, which is basically your Office 365 model, where Microsoft maintains the whole stack. Then you have PaaS platform as well. But what we're interested in today is more on the infrastructure as a service and using SharePoint for that. So you basically manage anything above the OS, your middleware, your application, your network, and things like that from an OS perspective. But Microsoft still maintains the host level jobs and workloads and things like that. Now, this graph here basically shows the three points that I want to make. Your on-prem, Office 365, and SharePoint as a service, SharePoint as an infrastructure service running on Azure, all right? So on your SharePoint on-premise, you have maximum control over your deployment. You have full control. You can scale in, scale out. You can add more hardware to your deployment, your infrastructure, and things like that. To your Office 365, you don't have that sort of control over your hardware or your scaling capabilities. But you do have a lot of cost efficiency because you don't have to buy the hardware and the infrastructure to maintain that. And then we come in this middle tier, which is Azure and SharePoint. You do have control over your application. You do have control over your scaling capability, your scale-out capability, but you don't have the cost that comes along with buying actual hardware from a shop or a vendor. Sure.
What did you mean by on that previous slide, 100% API coverage?
So basically what that means is I have full access to hit my application's API. So within Office 365, there's only so much you can do with modifying your, whatever your let's take SharePoint Online 365, for example. There's only so much I can modify on it. I can't run probably custom applications which would affect the other tenants on the platform and things like that.
Cut down SharePoint in a way, isn't it?
Which one? The Office 365, yes.
Yeah. Kind of struggle to work out.
We will be looking at it, what are the differences, why we go with SharePoint, Azure, and things like that. So that 100% API basically gives you full access.
All features
of your application,
yeah.
Basically. That, so... Yeah, basically, anything on that blue, within that blue, is yours. It's your responsibility, basically, to maintain it. So that's where the API also comes in for the application. Software as a service. You have no control. You just basically, it's a subscription service, right? Please feel free to stop me and ask questions. So, sorry, I should have mentioned that. All right, so what are the different SharePoint solutions that we can deploy on Azure? The first one is the development and test environments, all right? And then we will look into intranet and collaboration platforms. And then we'll do demo on the disaster recovery of an on-prem solution onto Azure straight away. And why we build internet-facing sites on Azure instead of Office 365. So that'll come back and answer a few of the questions that you were asking. Why do development and test platforms on Azure? It's easy. It's easy to build it, and we're going to see it on a demo within a couple of minutes. And it's not just easy to create that platform for you. It's easy to maintain that platform. It's easy to have control over your developers. You should always have control over your developers and what they do. So I can easily deploy a development platform and provide it to my end user developers or to my vendors and things like that. What's the value that I get out of it? It's fast. I can easily deploy. And we're going to see this very shortly. Why is it fast to get platforms up and running? Because you're basically just running a couple of scripts and you don't have to worry about the end hardware or buying the architecture or buying the platform to run these development platforms. You don't have to worry about it. If you have 10 developers come in one day and say, all right, we're starting the SharePoint project, we need this much hardware. I mean, you have not even started imagining your production deployments and what's that going to bring in from a cost perspective into the project. I mean, some of us use, I mean, this is the first time it's come out in months, this huge laptop. It's around 4.5Ks, but I have to run a few demos on the on-prem to Azure. That's why this beast has come out. But a lot of our developers back at Intigen use the big laptops, run their demo platform and things like that. You don't have to have that sort of a cost as well. Also, if you are a customer who's engaged with a vendor to do development work on your platform, you can easily engage them to come through the customer portal, which can be deployed through for your SharePoint development platform or your test platform. This reduces the cost of having, adding vendors onto the platform, having all those sort of security concerns and things like that. Basically, you reduce cost, you reduce time to go and start working on code, and you reduce your manageability of these. these machines will just keep running. And we're going to look towards the last demo where I use PowerShell to do everything, automate my whole platform. So these dev platforms don't have to run every day. Or, I mean, through the weekends or in the nights and stuff like that, adding cost to my Azure subscription. So these, I'm sure you guys have seen this. If you do have MSDN subscription, you do get a lot of benefits on Azure with the cost of running these platforms. All right, so I'm going to quickly show you how easy it is to deploy a development server. All right, so just a bit of basics. I've got an Active Directory server on Azure so that when I create my new dev servers, they can connect to the Active Directory. I can run my service accounts and things like that. All the bits and pieces, backend bits and pieces are covered by that. You're going to see one SharePoint server, which is totally fully built. I've run all the scripts and things like that. And I'll show you quickly another PowerShell window where I've just run the script to go and deploy a new dev server. So it's a blank new server. It takes around 50 minutes to run, so I just took the privilege of running it just a bit ahead. So, I've got a domain controller, and I've got a SharePoint dev box, which I've deployed recently. Let's look at how did I get to this stage, all right? So basically, if you do have MSDN, you can go to the gallery. Now, this can be completely scripted, which is what I'm going to show you next. So I can go Visual Studio and just choose Visual Studio Premium 2013 Update 3. Basically, what that's going to give me is a standalone box which you just run one script to install SQL, followed by SharePoint, and it installs the Visual Studio components as well, all in one script. So you don't have to actually go in and physically run these things. So let's say I have a developer starting on Monday, I can run this on Friday and have the VM shut down. And on Monday morning, I can have a scheduled task saying, go start up this VM for the developer and send all the details to him. This developer can be sitting even at his home or at his vendor office to do the work, which we'll look at very soon. So how many of you guys use Azure on a day-to-day basis? Cool. So how many of you have seen the portal? All right, so I'm not going to cover too much on the portal then. All right, so you basically choose the Visual Studio 2013 Update 3 to run. Now, with PowerShell, what can you do with it? All right, so that's what I'm going to show you. You don't have to go through the portal every time to run these sort of scripts. So if I have 20 people starting, I can write a PowerShell script with all the pre-configured details of Azure and have a whole set of dev servers up and running in maybe 1 hour. All right, so this is a small script that I run just to do the same purpose. All right, so 5, 6, 7, 8 lines of code. Basically, it goes and pulls up all the variables for me, different VM names and things like that. But all the other configuration is the same. Now, there have been few changes to Azure in the last couple of weeks on the networking side of things. So I mentioned you can shut down VMs and restart them on a time-to-time basis, on a scheduled way. But what happens is when these VMs start, they can pick up random IP addresses from the pool, all right? So Azure has started doing something called static IPs, so you can set up static IPs and things like that. So what I recommend you guys to do is, I'm going to be putting up the scripts, I don't know exactly where, but I'll send it out through the Yammer groups and things like that, where the scripts are going to be. So basically what I have is, I'm setting up the cloud service, and then I set up the networking part. The networking part of any Azure VM is the most important component. There have been so many times where, when I was first learning on Azure and things like that, I've gone through the whole deployment, Active Directory, SQL, SharePoint, and then came to a stage where I can't deploy another SharePoint server because my subnet doesn't give me more IP addresses. So I got stuck. I mean, even though I planned it and things like that. So you can put a lot of focus on whether this is SharePoint or any other platform workload that you're bringing in. Go through your networking. Try it, test it, play around with it, have a good play on a big piece of paper or Surface Pro 3 as they're promoting it, and have the service. So all I've done is, just before you guys walked in, I ran the script, all right, and it's gone and deployed a server called NZDevSP2. Sorry. So it's just deployed that server NZDevSP2 for me. On my Azure platform, I already have a server called NZDevSP1, which is just a fully finished product and things like that. So I'll take you guys through it very quickly. So let's jump on SP1. All right. So when you provision this VM, basically what you get is this desktop here. And then you have a folder here called configure the SharePoint developer desktop. And you come up to the script, and you just run that script over there. Can you guys see it? Yep. So all you have to do is enter the farm account and the password. Boom. You have a full dev platform running Visual Studio, SQL 2012 Developer Edition. So it installs the BI components as well. So if you want to play around with dashboards and stuff like that, it does do that. You can also install the Configure SQL script on your own if you want to have some modifications to your SQL server and things like that. But if you're just writing .NET code and things like that and you need Visual Studio to play around with, yeah, go ahead. It's just one script and you're done. Now, all this can be automated and run. So you can mass deploy development servers now. You don't need the hardware and the architecture to maintain it within your on-prem. All right, so I've got a client machine here, which is basically sitting somewhere else, and I'm going to be accessing that dev platform, all right? Now I'm going to show you two different ways. The second way is going to be in a demo later on, where I'll basically have a complete VPN set up between my on-prem. So, these machines were shut down. Oh, I didn't sacrifice enough. Oh, I'm so sorry. I haven't set up the VPN yet. So, as you can see, this is just connected to my on-prem, and that's why it's not connected to the VPN server. So I'll quickly show you how to set up the VPN. So all I'm doing is I go onto the management portal, go to network, I choose my dev platform network. So as you can see, there are two different networks to segregate all the platforms. So this network here is basically my Azure dev platform, and these are the clients that will connect to it. So this is what is called a point-to-point VPN, all right? And all I do is download. So this can be packaged and sent out through your group policy and stuff like that to the dev machines, or you can send it out to an external vendor as well. Anybody can install it. And I shall download it here. Yep. Now, a couple of things. You have to identify your machine that's coming in from, all right? So I'm going to make a couple of certs here. And there we go. VPN. All right. So the first cert that I make is a self-signed cert about the machine that I'm coming in from. So I'm just going to run it here. Oops. That's because I didn't start it as an administrator.
So is this an encrypted IP tunnel that you created?
It is a point to site. So my laptop is my point, and the Azure network is the site network. It's a good question. Thank you so much. Please do go ahead and ask me questions. I'm a bit nervous, so make yourself comfortable by asking me questions and making me even more uncomfortable. Right, let's go do that. Oh. There we go. Let's try that again. So it succeeded and made that certificate for me. And then what I do is I generate a client certificate based on that self-signed certificate. Come on, mouse. Right. Cool. And then what I do is I go onto the Azure platform portal and just upload that the client identification certificate, which is that one there. And boom. And we go into installing the VPN. So that's the VPN software there. Of course, it's not going to sign, but it just... Sure. Thank you for bringing up that question as well. You don't need any firewall ports to be opened on your enterprise. It will work behind your on-prem deployments as well. On-prem. So your edge firewall, edge devices, will just let the traffic through. No, it's actually on-prem. It's another. It's a bunch of machines sitting at home. I have remoted it. Yeah. So let's go look at that VPN. It's been set up. All I do is I just ran that exe. I go and connect. Press connect. Continue. And that's it. I'm onto my dev platform, ready to rock and roll. This will work from on-prem and also wherever I am. So I can take this machine, whichever the client machine is, and connect it to an internet source, and that's it. I'm connected to my dev platform without any other enterprise requirements and things like that. Cool? So that basically shows the... any questions on the dev platform, guys, before I move on? So did you get the... Yes. On the SharePoint server, it is a trial version, the 180 days trial version that comes along with it. Yeah. Any SharePoint image that you deploy out of Azure is a 180 day license. So basically, the question was, what sort of license do we get when we deploy the dev platform? And also to add on to your add on to the answer is you need to have MSDN to have the ability to deploy this virtual machine, if that helps. Yeah. All right. Now with intranet and collaboration, I do have a slightly different feel to Azure. What I recommend to clients is, if you are new to the intranet and collaboration platform, try Office 365 first. Give it a shot, all right? And if Office 365 doesn't meet your requirements, and that is to answer your question, sir, sitting in the front, I'm so sorry, is if the Office 365 doesn't meet your requirements, basically saying that if you have latency issues or if you have, you know, I'm not able to deploy some solutions, custom solutions that I wanted, because it's a tenanted model, right? You're sharing that platform with other clients and things like that. If that doesn't meet your requirements, then go to an on-premise solution. And if you can't deploy an on-premise solution on your own, get to a vendor who can help you do that. But if your business requirement as a company is to go into the cloud, go into Azure. Because Azure supports SharePoint unlike any other vendors, because it's a Microsoft product of its own. All right. So you get as an end user for Azure, the support that you get out of Azure support is incredible. It's not just because I work for a vendor, but I have nothing to do with Microsoft or anything of that sort. But I've had a lot of support calls over the years, over last year, on several projects and things like that with networking and things. And the support is incredible. Azure support is incredible. Disaster recovery. This is my specialty that I do back at Intigen as well, is to help clients take their on-prem deployments and work out a disaster recovery solution for them. When you think about disaster recovery, it's always about another data center. That's an added cost again, all right? Why use a different data center which you have to invest in when you can deploy your disaster recovery complete platform on Azure? And we'll look at that. So lower cost for your disaster recovery platform. Your disaster recovery environment can be in either one of these three states. It can be in a cold state where it's fully switched off. It's never switched on. So you're not adding on to your Azure subscription and things like that. Or it can be in a warm state, basically meaning you have a single instance running, but the rest of your platform, the rest of your architecture is switched off. All right. So rest of your farm is switched off. So if you have three or four SharePoint servers, you can switch off or two to three and switch on one server. More elastic platform. What basically it means is, let's say you go into a disaster recovery or DR scenario or a high availability scenario, and you find out that, no, the Azure platform is not scaling to what our requirements are. It's easy to scale out. Just like how I deployed my development server through a script, you can deploy or scale out your SharePoint farm in an instance using scripts, PowerShell scripts from your on-prem servers. So this is your basic on-prem server that we are looking at, a deployment that we're looking at. We've got a couple of Active Directories, SharePoint servers, and you have your SQL database, all right? So what I'm recommending to you guys is basically build your DR platform on Azure. The gray boxes that you see are all switched off servers according to me. All right, I'm switching them off, and I'm only going to switch them on when I require. The green SharePoint server is a server that's switched on and connect. I'm jumping my server. So the green server is a switched on and always running SharePoint server. SQL platform can be in a is also on a running state. But the way I connect them is through site-to-site VPN. That means I'm just extending my on-prem data center to Azure. Azure is just an extension. It's not an actual disaster recovery environment with different sets of IP addresses, networks, or any of those complexities. This platform, your on-prem data center, is just going to see Azure as just an extension, another network, all right? All I'm going to be doing is SQL log shipping. Now, there has been some changes in the last couple of weeks to do always-on availability and things like that from on-prem to Azure. Unfortunately, it's still not supported. That's why I didn't want to talk on it as well. But if we do have some time, I'd like to show you guys a few things on always-on as well. Always-on, so basically what happens with always-on, do you know about SQL always-on? Right, okay. So basically, you're just clustering your SQL servers based on Windows failover cluster, and you have one single point of contact from your SharePoint server to your SQL farm, all right? The problem with Azure is that right now is that you get cloud service. Your SharePoint servers are all, or your SQL servers are all sitting behind a cloud service. It's like a bubble with a single public IP. All right. So if your SharePoint servers need to talk to your SQL cloud always-on servers, it has to go through the public IP address. Now you can set up access list and things like that to so only allow your SharePoint network, so your SharePoint public IP addresses to come in through and things like that. The unsupported thing is right now you can set up static WIPs on your static IPs on your load balancer. All right. So that means, if I have internal IP range, I can set up my load balancer to have an internal IP address. So you can send your SharePoint data on request to the SQL through that internal IP address range now. But it's still not supported, as in if you go and look at MSDN, it's, the whole article has been taken off, so that's why I didn't want to talk on it, and thanks a lot.
Just to clarify, sure. So you're saying if you have your database mm-hmm. in your SharePoint servers in Azure,
yeah.
in order to get the SharePoint servers, web and apps up to talk to the database, you've got to go back out through the internet and back in.
That's only for always-on availability, because you have your three... Yeah, it is a bit of a hassle to get it to talk. Yeah, it is a bit of a hassle. Is everyone clear on why always on is currently not, probably not the best deployment strategy at the moment, but I'm pretty sure it's going to change in the next 2-3 weeks. That's what I've heard. All right, cool. So let's, I'm going to demo quickly. Come on, demo gods, work this time. This was the demo that I'm a bit scared about, because I'm actually going to fail a few things and stuff like that. So, all right, let's look at this. So I've got a DR farm running on Azure, which has got basically the domain controllers, a SharePoint server, a SQL server. All right? Now, NZ app, this server here is not part of the DR farm. All right? What I've done is, just to show you another scenario, it is an extension of my on-prem servers, SharePoint servers, on Azure. So it is actually part of the same farm, which is on-prem. The DR servers can be a different farm as well, which is what I highly recommend. If you're going into a DR scenario, you have your data, content databases and things like that on a read-only mode and stuff like that, which we'll look into very shortly. So, cool. So basically, I have... SQL Server, I'll start from the back end first. What I've got is a site-to-site VPN, all right? So what's happening is, if I look at my network, this is my Azure network that is running on Azure, and it is connected to my on-prem network as well. So you see that gateway there? I would love to show you guys this demo, but it's a bit long to set up the gateway. It takes around 20 minutes for the gateway to come online and things like that. So when we cover the VPN demo, I'll be quickly taking you through the setup process, but I won't actually show you the setup because it takes around 20 minutes for the gateway to come up. So the concept is you have two public IPs, all right, and you're setting up a VPN between your on-prem and your Azure network, and it's always on. So not SQL always on, the VPN is always on. So it's just an extension of your on-prem service, all right? And which is why, if I jump onto my SQL, as you can see, my on-prem, yeah, it took a bit of a while to refresh. So I've got on-prem databases running a SharePoint farm, and it is synchronized to my Azure SQL server. So from on-prem, it is just doing pure high-availability log shipping. Only thing I haven't done is set up a witness server, because I don't want that failover to happen automatic. I want it to be a manual failover so that I can show you guys how to do it and things like that. So basically, if we go into any one of the servers, as you can see, the zoom it. Yep, cool. So that's my on-prem SQL server, and that's my Azure SQL server, and they're basically just mirroring the databases on a continuous basis through the VPN. So all I needed to do was. Now let's fail the SQL server. All right. Just to show you guys that it's all happening, I'll open. So this site is called hub.onprem.com, just to show that it is sitting on the on-premise network. And we are going to fail the SQL server. So I'm just going to go and stop it. This is my on-prem SQL server that I am taking offline. If my mouse will come there. And very soon, we should see these guys go red. Cool? That's my SQL server failing on-prem. Come on, fail properly. So I'm going to quickly jump onto my Azure SQL Server now. Because I failed the primary to the mirror server, I have to bring up my databases on the mirror side. All right, they have to be brought online. You can set up the automatic system by using a witness server, but if it's across the WAN, I highly recommend using a manual failover process. It's just easier that way. So, come on.
Is that asynchronous mirroring?
Yeah. But I can go synchronous as well if my connection between my on-prem and Azure is less than a couple of milliseconds and stuff like that, which is going to be quite difficult for us in
news.
Yeah, it does vary. Yeah.
Yeah.
So New Zealand and Southeast Asia, which is our closest Azure data center, is 160 milliseconds on a VM that's not running any workload and things like that, so blank VM. So once we bring in the workload, the latency would come down a bit more. But I've seen better latency to US West Asia, US West as well, Western US data centers as well. Yeah. Don't have the numbers, unfortunately, with me, but it'll be in the double digits, I would presume, to go there. I mean, if we do a speed test even to an Azure, Sydney-based data center and stuff like that, we do get the double digits on a, all right. Come on. Right, so I've just logged on to my Azure SQL Server. As you can see, the mirror is in a disconnected in recovery state. Okay, so please ignore the databases on top, which is my other DR farm. That's what's showing on Azure databases as well. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to open a script. Boom. Let's see. All right, so this script is basically just going to switch the roles from a mirror state into a primary state, so I'm just going to run it. This one is quite standard. I'm sure pretty much all DBAs use the same script. It's just a script to just go, hey, are these databases in a mirror state? Okay, bring them to primary state. So all those on-prem databases have come back online. So if we do a quick refresh. So this site opened while the SharePoint servers were connected to the on-prem SQL server, right? And we're just going to jump quickly and check. Yep, so now all the databases here have become principal. So SharePoint servers on premises is talking to Azure SQL servers. It's not the other way around. I'm still using my SharePoint servers on premises to my SQL servers on Azure. Oh, well, MySQL. So if I go to my client and do a refresh, moment of truth. So we still have access to the site. Now, all this process can be automated using Witness Server or, you know, System Center and things like that. So you can use System Center to be notified, oh, my primary SQL Server is down, send this script to my mirror server, bring them back online, get the scripts working and things like that. Now, with Always On, you wouldn't even notice this sort of a gap, or you don't have to do all these manual work and things like that, because the SharePoint server will just talk to the next available node on the quorum. Right? So I've just failed my SharePoint SQL server on-prem. Now I'm going to fail. Yep. So if you're going to DR, I highly recommend clients to go into a read-only state of their content databases and stuff like that. It could be a 10-minute outage or something you do while your primary SQL server comes back online and things like that. So you can set it up to go into a read-only state as well. I just wanted to show the writable state as well. Yeah. So when you have a read-only state, on top of the SharePoint site, you'll just get maintenance work is happening and the site is in a read-only state if you go into a read-only mode. Cool. So now I'm going to... what I'm going to do is... No, no. So if you have two different farms, so if you're restoring from a primary farm to a DR farm, what we recommend to clients is basically have another crawl run through your content databases and things like that once it's restored on your DR farm. But if your content database is a couple of terabytes, it's a huge site or something of that sort, you can script it in such a way that you fail you actually bring search databases and connect them to your DR farm search database, replace them basically, and then you can run scripts to reindex, just map the search application to use those search databases as well. So you're back online much quicker with indexed crawled items as well from your DR farm.
So there's quite a lot of scripting work. Really,
yeah. Properly in the real world. Yeah, it is. So, as you've seen, I've just failed my on-prem workload onto my Azure platform as well. Now, I can go and shut down this whole data center on-prem and still hit the SharePoint site because I have this server here, which is another SharePoint SQL, SharePoint box running on Azure, but it is sharing the same farm. So, if I bring up Central Admin, System Settings. As you can see, this is another server that's sitting on Azure, but not on-prem as well. So I have complete high availability on my SharePoint sites as well, not just on SQL. Okay. Right, let's quickly apologize for taking more time. We had some issues. So, when you're building internet-facing sites, focus on building a great site instead of worrying on the actual infrastructure of building a high-performing data center for your public-facing sites as well. So take advantage of the elasticity in Azure, basically meaning start small on Azure, and when your site requires that sort of load and performance and things like that, scale out your Azure platform. Bring the servers online or create more SharePoint servers or web front ends to take on that load. Now, this is, I love this integration with Azure Active Directory. So basically what it means is I can set up all my customers on Azure Active Directory and have all the self-service capabilities so they can service their own passwords and things like that, and have SharePoint use the Azure Active Directory for authentication as well. All right, so we'll look at it very quickly. So I've got three main components here: on-premise, all the authors and stuff like that of your public-facing sites. I've got visitors, and I've got partners and customers, all right? So basically, I've got my SharePoint site sitting on Azure. I create a VPN tunnel to the default zone for the authors. So they basically come in through your on-prem authentication to the site so that they can author the site. They can make changes to the public-facing website. Your visitors come through the internet zone and basically use the anonymous site feature of the same SharePoint site. Your partners, though, come in through the Windows Azure Active Directory, so they have a login system. They can come in and make changes to the actual site through the extranet. I mean, you can cut this down, but basically, you don't have to add your customers and your vendors in an internal on-prem situation and have the Active Directory add-on part of it. They don't need an actual CAL license to use the SharePoint file. So what keeps it ticking? Let's quickly go through the under the hood. So virtual machine instance sizes, we'll quickly run through the portal deployment, which you guys have seen it through. And then we'll look at affinity groups, which is probably going to be made redundant with the availability of the static IPs that I was talking about and regional networks. I'll quickly touch on that. We'll look at storage, networking, availability sets, and partial for automation. All right? So these are the various Azure VM sizes that you can deploy. All right? Now, be careful. My personal experience is look at these numbers of maximum disk that you can use, even for SQL perspective. If you're going to have a massive SQL server, be careful of the number of disks that you can use for your temdb and your log files and things like that, because there are certain limits on the number of disks that you can provision to your Azure VM. All right? Your SharePoint farms usually sit in this category, the extra large to the A6 with the couple of cores and quite a bit of memory utilization available with them. Each disk has around 500 IOPS capability. All right? And I'm going to touch another number as well very quickly. So you can have around 1 terabyte of storage per disk. So each of your disks that you present to your Azure VM can have a maximum of 1 terabyte storage in there. Using your portal, you create your Azure VM that I showed you. We did the same thing for the Visual Studio 3, and we deployed a VM out of that. Affinity groups, basically, it is in use right now. What it basically means is all those components that go into creating your Azure VM bring it into an affinity group, which basically ties their racks very close by so that you have less latency when you create multiple VMs and things like that. So your storage is closer to the actual rack where your VM VHD file is deployed and things like that. So affinity group is probably the first thing that I create when I'm deploying a new platform. Now, how the disk work is, you have a virtual machine and you have local redundancy. So Azure basically writes it into two different storages as well. So as soon as it's written to the first disk, it's written again locally redundant into two other disks. Now, if you do choose the geo redundancy, so be careful when you choose the storage account, you can actually go change from geo is the default option. You can change it to local redundancy if it's a dev platform and stuff like that, so you can reduce your subscription cost as well. So it's by default goes into geo mode, but change it back to. So all my VMs, so that my cost is low till TechEd gets over, I've made them all locally redundant. So that means that's all that I get. But if I do go with the geo, what happens is it sends the data across to a closer regional data center. So let's say we had one in Auckland, it'll send it to the Hamilton data center as well and writes it again into three disks. All right. Now, what if a machine fails on the host or the host fails? So basically what happens is my virtual machine is inaccessible on that host. So Azure will take that VM and move it to the next available host, but still connected to my locally available storage and my geo available storage. Very quickly, these are the different network network capabilities that's available on Azure. It's pretty straightforward. As you can see, all your on-prem work is still functional on Azure as well. So you can do all your TCP ports, and it can be opened up, your UDP ports. Actually, I just want to quickly touch on this topic here. The custom load balancer health probes. Beautiful product. What happens is, let's say you have your load balancer, right? And you have multiple SharePoint servers sitting behind it. You access your SharePoint server through the cloud service IP, all right? Let's say I lose two of my SharePoint servers. The load balancer sends health probes, the Azure load balancer sends health probes to find out what's the health of each SharePoint box, all right? And sends my traffic to the next available node, which is healthy. So I can actually shut down IaaS to do maintenance work on a SharePoint box without traffic hitting that SharePoint server. And it's all done back behind the scenes and things like that. We did have a project that I deployed for the World Partner Conference for Microsoft where I did use a third-party load balancer as well to get layer 7 networking as well. So basically that means is I have multiple cloud services of SharePoint boxes, and the load balancer understands that capability and sends the traffic from different regions around the world to multiple cloud services that can service that SharePoint request. All right, quickly, the virtual networks, we spoke on this, the on-premise. So you basically create a site-to-site VPN. But what I'm more excited about is you can also have your point-to-site VPNs, which is basically the clients connecting to their dev machines and things like that. So you can have your developers connect to your Azure VM without being on-prem to, but all the traffic is still through a VPN connection, so it's secure and things like that. Now, this is a point you were asking, if it's accessible through a firewall, I can set up machines behind my firewall to use the point-to-point protocol, point-to-site feature as well to connect to my Azure VM. So I've technically touched on the VPN stuff, so I'm just going to skip through it. We're running quite short on time. External load balancers, what I was talking about, this is what I want to emphasize on in this slide. Now there's a new feature called reserved IP. Azure has a function, has a feature where it changes the public IP if it wants. All right. So if you guys were using SharePoint using a reserved IP, an IP address that was assigned to you through your cloud service, it can change. So you can set this up through a PowerShell as well to use the feature. This is the always-on functionality that I was talking about. So basically, I have reserved IP, public IPs, and I can set up reserved public IP on my SQL always-on as well. So that IP address doesn't change because always-on will break the moment that public IP address changes because it's not the cluster is not available anymore. So you can set up the reserved IP. These are all features that's probably come out post-March this year after the TechEd 2014 US one. So really cool features. I highly recommend you guys to check it out. So most of the VMs that I'm using today use all the new features, reserved IPs, static IP addresses internally. So I don't need a public IP address when I go through my VPN anymore to hit those machines. I can use my public, internally set up static IPs to hit those machines. If you do set up a SQL always on Azure, this is probably valid really for the next couple of weeks, but set up an access list so that your SharePoint farm is the only ones accessing the SQL servers. Again, internal load balancing, that's just what I spoke on. So I can set up my whole internal users to hit SharePoint on an internal load balancer. Availability set, very quickly, what it is basically you have multiple machines sitting on different racks. We don't know which one. But set up your virtual machines within the same availability set. So what happens is, if I had both the SharePoint servers on the same box by some chance, if this host was taken down, that means I lose my whole SharePoint farm, all right? If you create your SharePoint servers using availability set, Azure makes sure that the other SharePoint box that's created sits on another host. So even if this host gets taken down, my other host is there to immediately work while this VM is moved to another place. I believe somewhere I saw the number was around 15 minutes to move a VM to another host. But my second machine is always available. So availability set, another standard feature of all my scripts to go in when I deploy multiple servers. So these are your basic, this is actually a copy of the platform that we built. So I have my web front end sitting, let me quickly go show you. It's sitting under its own cloud service so that nobody else can affect it. So the app servers don't affect the web servers as well. And so these are the different roles that you can create. Now, we set up always-on availability for them as well. So again, part of the same cloud service. I wish I had more time, but I wanted to show you guys different PowerShell scripts that you can run for these, and I'll make them available instead. So I'll quickly talk you through what it is. So I can run automation to shut down VMs, restart VMs, and things like that from my on-premise laptop. So I don't need to be connected to Azure to do that. Basically, all I'll do is I'll call my subscription, and using my subscription, I get a PowerShell script to say, okay, give me that VM and do this function to that VM using. So you don't need to log on to your portal to do any of these functionalities. You can automate the whole process end to end. Virtual networks, everything that's coming out in virtual networks can only be done on PowerShell these days, using PowerShell. Storage is something which I wanted to show, but unfortunately, due to shortage of time, I can actually literally use a third-party tool like Cloud Explorer or something and go copy a whole VM in a couple of seconds. I can just literally replicate because that's how the storage works. It's a direct write to the blob storage. So it just picks up 128 gig, whatever the C drive comes in, which is 127 gigs or something, and within a couple of seconds, I have the same VM as a copy. So I can scale out my farm. That's the demo that I wanted to show, but for lack of time. Okay, so very quickly, what are the lessons that I've learned on one of these platforms? Use static IPs from now on. This is a text that I literally changed in the last couple of days once we gave off our PowerPoint presentation to Microsoft. Install SharePoint on C drive. Basically, I recommend not using a data disk because of the caching capabilities and stuff like that on Azure. So better write it onto the C drive the install part of it. But if you use a SharePoint image, it's anyway automatically written into the C drive. Availability set, availability set, availability set. I mean, I can't emphasize more, please. Yes, yep. Yep, I understand. And now the portal allows you to go and literally pick and choose what you want and how you want to scale your farm. You can even pick and choose an always-on availability platform. You can just go tick, yep, I want these servers named like this, this IP range, boom. It goes and creates the whole availability set, always-on SQL cluster, including SharePoint and Active Directory. But you do have to put a bit of work on the networking part of things, guys. Don't let the portal create the network. Plan your network and plan so that it's connected to your Azure platform. All right? Some SQL best practices. If you have a large content database, especially on Azure, I make different file groups and I'll put it into different actual physical disks on the VM portal. So let's say I have a 120 gig content database. I'll probably make a 50 gig content database and multiple 50 gig file groups in different storages on the Azure VM. So you get much better performance from a virtualization point of view as well. Again, instead of disk stripping, this is also, as you said, I was mentioning how you can create stuff over the portal. You can create a full SQL Server cluster using disk stripping as well. But I highly recommend use file groups for performance. TempDB and SharePoint are married to each other. SharePoint uses it left, right, and center, put it into a different disk, all right? Okay, this is a very quick point that I wanted to make. Each storage account can have only 20,000 IOPS. So that means each of my disks is 500. So just remember when you create your architecture, right? How many disks are you gonna assign to your different VMs and things like that, because that's the a fixed number. It's going to affect your performance up beyond this. Did you guys get that point? Sorry, I just wanted to emphasize that. But don't add more RAM and CPU to your existing platform on Azure. If you can scale out your SharePoint service, do that. Because you're scaling out across a cloud service, which has already got a load balancer and stuff like that. So your performance from a web traffic perspective is much better. I can just keep adding RAM and CPU till A9s or whatever, 120 gigs. It's just going to add cost to my subscription. Instead, I can use multiple VMs of multiple, a smaller size, which will give me much better bandwidth and, you know, much better traction with the SharePoint platform. So add more web front ends to your SharePoint farm. Don't, Active Directory is very key as well, so I'm not going to touch on that. This one, I've just read this article a couple of months back. They recommend not putting the actual Active Directory syswall on the C drive. Move it to another data disk and actually change the caching on it. So you can change the caching via scripts and things like that. So there are different types of caching services that's available on the disk that you add to your Azure VM. So that's a thing that we have actually seen performance changes on the authentication and things like that. Yeah. Summary, So we covered a few topics. I'm so sorry it took so much time, but we had a bit of difficulty starting. So why Azure? I hope I tried to touch the point on why create SharePoint on Azure and the different platforms that's available and things like that. We opened the hood and looked at a few of the bits and pieces that's moving in Azure and what makes it work on and some of the lessons that I learned. So this is a line that I give most of my clients when I do my pre-sales. Don't just think of deploying SharePoint just for, we need collaboration. How many servers do you need? And no. Actually plan it out, you know, plan your architecture out, because I've seen more SharePoint farms fail because of bad architecture, bad infrastructure, and bad planning. It's not because it was written, the application is written bad, or it's being not used to its performance. So end user, if you want that end user acceptance, build your platform that gives you a better outcome out of it for your end user. So as I was saying, SharePoint is a hardware eating monster, feed it food. And Azure is the food that I wanted to possibly make that point across to you guys. And that's pretty much it. So I survived. And these are some of the sessions that's available that's related to my topic. Try the hands-on labs. They're brilliant. You can learn a lot of the deployment stuff and things like that. And they're they're free as well. So anybody and everybody can do the hands-on labs. And that's me, Aben.